Shabbat Israel, Amen and Shema Israel.
And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our program today, The World Turned Right Side Up, was written by Erwin Gonchak.
Briefly stated, my problem was this: how to bring back to life an historical figure who'd been dead for almost two centuries. Now, I'm not referring to magic or reincarnation. I'm simply saying that all authors find it hard to make their subject and past live again. And they use different approaches to turn this trick. For example, Hendrik Willem van Loon actually invited a number of well-known personages to dine at his home every week. So, in a chapter of his book, you might find Moses, Erasmus, and Napoleon sitting down together at the same dinner table. And then all Van Loon had to do was copy down the conversation. Another historian, Samuel Eliot Morison, took to a small craft and carefully retraced the route of Christopher Columbus until he almost felt that he was sailing along with the great admiral of the seas on his voyage to the New World. Then there was Carl Sandburg, who sat himself down in a small cabin in the North Carolina hills, covered the walls with Civil War clippings and pictures, and in time saw before him the rough visage of Abraham Lincoln. Well, I tried all these approaches with my subject. I'm Solomon. I researched him to the bone, plastered my room with Solomon's stock in trade, old English pounds, Dutch dollars, Massachusetts pine tree shillings, even sent out dinner invitations. And then I waited. And I waited, and nothing happened. So the only recourse I had left was to go out into the field, to walk where the great man walked, to inhabit his land, to seek him out. So finally, I could say, this is the man. I know him now. First, I hopped on a train to the city of brotherly love. Then, in front of the terminal in Philadelphia, I flagged down a cab, began my search.
Where to, mister?
Well put, cabby. That's exactly my problem.
Huh?
How does one go about finding Haim Solomon, especially at this late date?
Who?
Haim Solomon.
Now, mister, there's a lot of Haim Solomons in this city. I even got a third cousin named Haim Solomon.
Well, I'm referring to the Haim Solomon. The revolutionary period, you know. Say, from 1772 to 1785, roughly speaking.
Roughly speaking, eh? Can you do me a favor, mister?
What?
Take a bus. It'll be easier for everyone.
Oh, no, you misunderstand. I merely use a figure of speech. I'm doing research, that's all. Soaking up local color, background material. Then I hope to find my man to, let's say, conjure him up in my mind's eye. But really, only in my imagination, I assure you.
You do, huh?
Definitely.
Take a bus, will you, mister?
Oh, come now. You cabbies know everything. Reporters and commentators are always questioning you guys on the state of the nation, the affairs of the world. So, tell me, where would be a good place to start?
Well, if you put it that way, on a professional basis... I'm Solomon, huh?
Yes.
Why don't you try Dock Street?
Certainly. An excellent suggestion.
We're here.
Of course. The shipping and commerce center of revolutionary days. The bustling marketplace. Here was where Solomon made his mark. Please, wait here for me. I'll be back. Now to imbibe the atmosphere of the shipping world.
exhausted.
I did see many interesting sights, but...
That eye in your mind didn't spot him.
Nowhere. I must sadly report, nowhere.
Where to next, mister?
You tell me.
Independence Hall.
Lead on, McDuck.
Himmelstein. The name's Himmelstein.
The afternoon. Morris Mansion, where Simon Solomon would meet the supervisor of finance, then the Bank of North America, he was one of the original contributors, the congregation Mikveh Israel, which he helped found, up and down the streets of red brick dwellings with white trim, well-scrubbed marble steps where he would walk, the libraries of the Historical Society of Pennsylvania, daughters of the American Revolution. But nowhere, nowhere was he to be found.
There's Front Street, mister.
This is where the leaders of the revolution would seek him out. Maybe here. Maybe now. Come, Himmelstein. Please, join me in a cup of coffee.
Solomon did most of his dealings in a coffee shop on this street.
Here, the traders and brokers would meet with him and settle the economic fate of the new nation. But my friend, he's not here now. I see that clearly enough. I'm afraid there must be something wrong with my approach. Perhaps if I spoke to Van Loon or Morrison or Sandberg...
Maybe my third cousin, Haim Solomon, could help you out.
Oh, I hardly think so.
I mean, the name sort of affected his whole life.
Huh?
You see... All the kids would make jokes about it. You know, the school teacher would tell the story of the original Haim Solomon.
Mm.
And then after school, the kids would call him, "Hey, Solomon, can you loan me 5 cents? Or, "Hey, Haim, I hear when Washington threw a silver dollar across the Potomac, you caught it on the other side." You know, stuff like that. The result was that he had to become a banker.
Hey. Say, I think you've got something there.
I have?
Certainly. Cliché, stereotype phrases, labels, surface material. That might provoke his anger, make him anxious to appear to straighten out the record. Figuratively speaking, I mean.
Huh?
Let's see, let's do. Freedom's banker.
Hey, what's wrong, mister?
Why didn't I think of this before? The revolution's honest broker.
Do you feel all right, mister?
I never felt better, thanks to your third cousin. This ought to do it. Washington's generous helper.
Mister, what kind of coffee are you drinking?
Don't you see? It's working. Finally, I've done it. That man coming towards me, out of the smoky haze, slight build, dressed in a long three-quarter frock coat, wearing a broad-brimmed Quaker hat, determined look on his face.
Mister, I just remembered. The cab's double parked. I'll see you later.
Yes, but hurry back, Himmelstein. You don't want to miss this historic occasion.
Sure, mister. You just take it easy. I'll be back later.
You there.
Me, sir.
Yes, you. Who else? You confounded, cliché-ridden author?
I thought that'd rouse your dander, Mr. Solomon.
Oh, I guess they serve a purpose, but there's more to a man than a few catchy descriptive phrases. There's flesh... and bones and sinews of the heart. And a lifetime of thoughts and deeds. But the history books hang some labels on you, and that's the image that remains. Well, there's much more to it than that, young man.
My very sentiments, Mr. Solomon.
I never was able to shake this cough. It finally killed me. I got it from the British jail, the provost, you know, in New York. Oh, what a foul place.
Yes, I know. Not that I've been there myself, just read about it.
Sometimes jail's the only place for a self-respecting person to be.
Mr. Solomon, I just saw one of those labels dropping right off your lapel.
Well, shall we begin?
By all means.
Sprechen Sie Deutsch.
Ja, ein wenig.
Parlez-vous français?
Oui, très bien.
Espanol?
Un poquito.
Italiano?
Un poco. But why only...
The rest Yiddish?
But why all the questions?
Just testing to see if you're the man to do the job.
Oh.
You see, the writer must have a good knowledge of languages. It's an important key to the narrative. It's this way. I was born in Poland, traveled all through Europe, self-educated, And it was really my ability to handle languages which helped me a lot to do my life's work. What you must know is that the revolution was part of a world conflict. Many nations were involved, and many different nationalities were helping the Americans. So languages were invaluable.
Yes, of course.
For example, a knowledge of languages helped to save my life.
It did.
Would you like to hear about it?
Oh, yes. Yes, a rounded picture. That's what I'm after.
It happened after I'd been in New York a while, landed there in 1772, and quickly became a member of the Sons of Liberty. And then, after a few years...
Ben Solomon, face the court.
Yes, General.
These are the charges made against you before His Majesty George III's court-martial in the colony of New York in the year of 1778. You are charged with treason against His Majesty's forces in America, assisting spying carried out by American agents, sheltering these spies and giving them information.
All good patriots, the salt of the land.
You are charged with sheltering in your house escaped continental prisoners and helping them leave Manhattan Island.
Only could I have done more.
In addition, Ames Salomon, you are charged with being an accomplice in a plot to burn the king's fleet and to destroy the British warehouses around New York. And lastly, in your capacity as interpreter for the Hessian troops, you willfully promoted desertion and sedition. How do you answer these charges?
Does it make any difference? The verdict has already been determined.
Solomon, we could have used a man of your talents. You made a foolish choice.
I made the same choice in Poland when the Russians, Austrians, and Prussians marched in to carve up the country. I was on the side of liberty.
Well, you shall not be given such an opportunity again.
Perhaps not. But I know now, God willing, that a land is being formed that will serve as a refuge for all freedom-loving people.
M. Solomon, when the sun rises tomorrow morning, you will be hanged by your neck until pronounced dead.
And so it would have been. But there was a certain boy, ruddy cheeks and all, fresh from the fields of Hesse in Germany, who stood guard over me.
Ja, Herr Solomon. I was told you could speak my language, and so to be very watchful and careful.
Careful? Watchful? There are bars between us, and you were there, and I am here. And tomorrow I won't even be here anymore.
Ja, tomorrow, I know. Ja, too bad.
How old are you, mein Sohn?
17.
A good number. 17. 17. 1776. Do you know what that means?
1776. Oh, yeah. That year, the Elector of Hesse called us up to serve in the army.
Serve in the army, my foot. Soldier of the King of England, you mean, for £7 a head? To war against Americans who are fighting for freedom, everyone's freedom.
I'm sorry, Herr Solomon. I'm not going to talk with you anymore. I heard what you did when you served as a translator to our troops. Got the men to desert. That's what you did.
Desert? Desert from what? You're the one who was deserted by your own king who sold you like a head of cattle to fill his own coffers.
Herr Solomon, I'm not going to listen to you.
Don't, younger man. It's all right with me. Anyway, old Solomon isn't going to be around much longer to do much talking. Are you listening? Well, not to me. I mean to the voices sweeping the land.
Voices? I hear no voices.
Patrick Henry, give me liberty or give me death. We are fighting for something precious. What are you fighting for? The Elector of Hesse, who doesn't give one hoot if you live or die?
He waved to us as we left.
Very touching.
I was told not to listen to you.
Oh, not to me. To the Frenchman, Lafayette. The moment I heard of America, I loved her. What man has not his little America? You carry it inside of you, in your heart.
In my heart?
And a small voice whispers, rebellion against tyrants is obedience to God. Do you hear?
I hear, a little, maybe.
Then listen to the Liberty Bell ring out loud and clear.
And what does it say?
Proclaim liberty throughout the land, unto all the inhabitants thereof. Does the Elector of Hesse make such proclamations?
Nein. Never have I heard that.
There's one more voice, younger man, that you should listen to.
Yeah?
And listen ever so closely to it.
I will.
General George Washington, commander of the Continental Forces.
Oh.
His voice carries far and wide over the mountains and rivers and valleys of this new nation. Are you listening?
Now I am listening.
100 spanking new acres of American soil with citizenship to boot if you come over to the American lines.
Is it so?
It is so.
I don't know.
Mine's own. You're young. And the nation is young. Throw in your lot with freedom.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I will do it.
Great. Now, everyone's sleeping. Get out of this place. Keep to the bypaths and head north. The American lines are just above the river. With luck and a prayer, you can make it. You can.
No one will catch me.
Good. Just one thing more.
Yeah, yeah. What is it?
Just as a favor to a friend in need, could you please open this lock before you go?
Certainly, Mr. Solomon. I can read maps with the best of them.
Well, then, see, I moved up Manhattan through the heavily wooded areas on the Morningside Heights, then westward to the Hudson with the British on my trail all the time.
Yes.
Eastward past the Dyckman House, and finally to Spuytendyvil Creek, across Yonkers, and then up to Dobbs Ferry.
And Washington's line.
Exactly. And it was there, walking among the tattered troops and their tattered tents, that I knew what my mission had to be during the Revolution. The army was not only starved, but naked, shirtless and barefoot, lacking clothing, blankets. And all around the American countryside, there was food and clothing aplenty, but headed to the highest bidder, which was the British. Although I was penniless at the time, I vowed I would do everything in my power to supply this army when I could. Then it was on to Philadelphia, the marketplace of the nation. And the rest, as you know, is history.
Yes, yes, I'm reading it. Now, Mr. Solomon, saying that you're here, there are some papers I came across buried in the stacks of the Historical Society. I have them right here in my briefcase. Now, I wonder... Mr. Solomon? Where are you? Mr. Solomon? Mr. Solomon! Here I thought I finally had him.
You feeling better, mister?
Hmm?
How's it going now?
Oh, it was going just fine, Himmelstein, until... Oh, he just disappeared into the smoky hay. In the mind's eye.
That again. What's this stuff on the table?
Source material I uncovered today. It's odd. Just when I was going to ask him to review them with me, he up and left.
Who?
I'm Solomon.
Oh, nice meeting you. I'll see you around.
Come back. You can't leave now. Here. I'll help you sort this material. Now, these are hard to come by. A lot of the Solomon documents were destroyed when the British invaded the country in the War of 1812.
Okay. As long as you're alone, I'll stay.
See? French, Dutch, Spanish, bills of exchange, paymaster for the French forces, commodity trading for Washington's army, loans to impoverished government officials.
What a man.
Over $500,000 from him to the government to keep things going. Never received it back and died flat broke at 45. Not a trace of profiteering.
Say, mister.
Hmm?
How do you explain this?
What's that?
These papers here.
Now, let me see.
How can it be? That's unbelievable. Shocking. What does it mean, mister?
Time Solomon was giving money to the enemy. To the British.
No, say it ain't so, mister.
Well, these are the documents, and documents don't lie.
What'll happen now?
Well, all the textbooks will have to be rewritten.
Mister, think of the kids.
And that statue up in Chicago, George Washington in the middle, clasping hands with Robert Morris and Haim Solomon. Well, they'll just have to dynamite part of it away. Be like Washington shaking hands with Benedict Arnold.
Mister, for the sake of the younger generation, you gotta forget you ever saw these papers.
I can't. An historian must follow the truth, no matter where it may lead.
If only you had taken a bus.
It's too late now. I'll just have to see him again, that's all. Mr. Solomon, what is the meaning of this? Playing both sides of the street.
Here he starts again. I'd better go put another dime in a parking meter.
Labels, and now its infamous accusation.
Mr. Solomon, I'm sorry. I assure you it hurts me as much as it hurts you. But I must ask you this question. Do you deny that these documents belong to you?
Let me see. They're mine.
And I'm afraid it looks pretty bad for you.
It does?
Yet, I will be tolerant. The revolution was peculiar in many ways. Even Washington complained at times that there wasn't enough spirit in the revolution to raise a holla. Many people didn't take any side at all, and many went back and forth, depending on who was winning.
And you think that was true of me?
I don't want to be peremptory, but you must admit that the evidence I have is, to say the least, quite suggestive.
I wasn't anxious to go into this subject, but you forced me to. First, please take note of the dates when the money was given.
1781, 1782.
Does that mean anything to you?
Well, war was still on, but the Battle of Yorktown was over.
Exactly. The tide of war had shifted irrevocably. And now it was only a matter of time until the Continentals would be victorious. Now, it happened that about this time I was riding with my head clerk, Mr. McCrae, near the city of Lancaster.
You see them there, Mr. Solomon?
I do, Mr. McCrae. Our soldiers, still ill-clothed, ill-fed.
They aren't our soldiers.
No?
Enemy troops captured at Yorktown, being quartered here in Pennsylvania.
How the mighty have fallen. Once I saw them in their gilded uniforms and their fancy dress in New York. Now, an unfortunate band of ragamuffin soldiers.
Those are the fates of war.
Doesn't anyone supply them with the necessities?
Well, seeing the way the war is going, it looks like their Tory friends have deserted them. They do have bills of exchange on foreign banks, but no one will take them around here. They just don't trust their paper.
These men have fought well for what they believed was right. We must try to help them.
Oh, Mr. Solomon, don't you think we have enough trouble disposing of the government's bills without taking on the enemies now?
Mr. McCrae, do you know what was the first order General George Washington gave his men after the Battle of Yorktown?
Oh, what was that?
Prepare 6,000 loaves of bread for the starving enemy troops. Can we do anything less?
I guess not, Mr. Solomon.
The British band was playing The World Turned Upside Down. And here George Washington was telling our people to put it right side up again, to be magnanimous in victory. I would like to believe, Mr. McCrae, who was thinking of the scriptural injunction, rejoice not when your enemy falls, and if your enemy be hungry, give him bread to eat.
On the way back to the station, I explained the whole story to Himmelstein, the cab driver. And he was so overjoyed to hear it that he whistled Yankee Doodle all the way there. And of course, I also felt very good myself. For like the historians Van Loon, Morrison, and Sandburg, in a small way, I thought, I had been privileged to gain a certain insight into the makeup of my subject. And all the way in the cab, then on the train back to New York, I kept saying to myself, yes, the world turned right side up. That's the measure of the man. Yes, this is the man. I'm Solomon. I know him better now.
If you would like a copy of today's script, send your name and address, with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling, to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Mr. Samuel H. Daroff, member of the cabinet of the Philadelphia branch of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America and a prominent civic leader. Mr. Daroff.
The story of Chaim Solomon is both timely and timeless. The battlefields where the ideas and ideals which motivate mankind are in conflict and are daily concerns for all of us, as they were in the days of the American Revolution. Man's eternal fight for freedom with dignity and an atmosphere of compassion, justice, and love is delineated dramatically in the story of this great American and great Jew. We meet here the human being, not the legend, and are made to realize that only in the heart of human beings, the great and the small, can lie the eventual victory of our world of democratic principles and religious inspiration. Chaim Solomon is known to all of us as a patriot whose financial assistance helped spark the revolution to success. But his contribution would be hollow, in spite of its magnitude, unless we recognize, as this portrayal helps us to do, the depth and sincerity of spirit which motivated the financial deed. We look back with great reverence, especially in my native city of Philadelphia, on the life and times of Chaim Solomon. And it is imperative that we look forward at the same time with renewed determination to pursue the highest goals of mankind with the same dedication and perseverance which were so prevalent at the birth of our great land. This vivid portrait of Chaim Solomon symbolizes the kind of courage and conviction which are so sorely needed in today's world of strife and turmoil.
Thank you, Mr. Daroff. Our eternal light drama today, The World Turned Right Side Up, was written by Erwin Gonchak. Cantor Robert H. Siegel sang the liturgical introduction. Featured in the cast were Carl Weber as the writer, Louis Van Ruten as Chaim Solomon, and Daniel Occo as the cab driver. Others were Jim Stevens as the young soldier, Harvey Hayes as the general, and Bradford Hoyt as McRae. This is Vic Robey. Our program was directed by George Voutsas. Portions of this program were pre-recorded. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is the NBC Radio Network.